This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose.
Hey, it's a Tuesday morning. Taz and the Moose. Mark Malusis is flying solo, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Mikey B and Pete across the way, Heller with your updates as we have another hour left to play with. Dante Hall is going to join us, a former Kansas City Chief return man, a nine-year NFL veteran. We'll talk a little bit about the brilliance of Patrick Mahomes, what the Chiefs have been doing this year, and just how good Matt Mahomes is and will be as his NFL career does move along. So look forward to that, and that's coming your way about 20-plus minutes from now. So that'll be a good conversation, but we kick off the third and final hour with the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose, number one.
Seahawks 21-7 win versus the Vikings on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I gotta love the lime green jerseys for Seattle last night. At home, the 12s in attendance. Russell Wilson was terrible. I mean, he throws... Seattle wins a game in 2018 NFL where their quarterback throws for 72 yards. Think about that. That is stunning. I mean, Cousins, who was atrocious as well, threw for over 200 yards last night. I mean, absolutely and completely stunning. Now, you get the Bobby Wagner block and should have been called a penalty. They threw a penalty initially, then picked it up and said it wasn't, or it should not have been a block. And it was a bad call by the officials on the field. As we talked to Jim Diapolos, former NFL referee or official, earlier last hour. The Seattle Seahawks win the game 21-7. And really the fallout from the game, first off, the will, the intensity, the winning mentality of Seahawk football is still there. And it's still there, and I think it really matriculates down from the head coach and Pete Carroll. And he's done a wonderful job. Seattle wakes up this morning as an 8-5 football team after their 14-point victory last night. The Minnesota Vikings are a 6-6-1 team. The fallout from last night's game is this. I mean, Seattle, they don't have to do much over the final three games of the regular season. Maybe win a game. That's it. Maybe two. But probably all they need to do is win one to find themselves in the playoffs in the NFC. A defense that at the start of the year only had three players. Two linebackers, including Wagner. One of those players. So they only had three players left from that great defense from years ago. Russell Wilson, the offensive line has improved this year. They've got back to run the football with Rashad Penny and also Chris Carson, who's been the go-to running back. You look at Doug Baldwin's been banged up for the majority of the year. Did not give it a go last night. And the passing offense, even though it was not good last night at all, was good enough. And the defense this year has been exquisite. They get after the quarterback. Defensive line has been great. And the Seahawks are a team that's playing great football at the right time of the year. Now you get to the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota this year, we talk about disappointments. And we mentioned it last hour, and picks can pile up about the rumor maybe Coughlin returning to the sidelines next season for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Great disappointment this year. I know injuries. Marone's not done a good job. Coughlin frustrated. Wants to see that city win again. And the high expectations for a team that lost to the Patriots last year in the AFC Championship game. The Minnesota Vikings in the offseason spent $84 million on Kirk Cousins. Now, they did lose Pat Shurmur, their OC, who became the Giants head coach. However, they spent $84 million on Kirk Cousins to be an upgrade at the position, and he hasn't been. And to take that offense to another level, the goal this year when you spend that kind of money is not just to make the playoffs. The goal is to win a Super Bowl. And the Minnesota Vikings going into week 15 of the NFL regular season are a 6-6-1 team. And they've been a massive disappointment. And Cousins is getting called out on the carpet. And listen, Kirk Cousins is what he is. He's the same quarterback with Minnesota that he was with Washington. He needs help around him. Doesn't play great against great teams. Last night, a perfect case in point. I think he's 0-7 now as a starter in Monday Night Football, which is atrocious. And he was not good last night. Aside from a garbage touchdown pass to Dalvin Cook when they were down 21-0, he wasn't particularly good. But I also think if you're going to blame Kirk Cousins, you have to blame the new offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, as well, because he has not been good. And there have been a lot of conversation in Minnesota, outside Minnesota, about his play calling and maybe him wanting to show a little shine on himself about trying to potentially move to being a head coach after this year instead of doing what's right by the team. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I do know this. They've regressed at the OC position. Cousins, if you give him the right personnel, put him in the proper position to succeed, he'll make the necessary throws, and he's a better player than Case Keenum. He just has not played better this year. And if they don't make the playoffs, the Minnesota Vikings this season will be one of the... they will be a bigger disappointment than the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is at least the Jags, and I told them last year before the season started, going back and rolling back with Blake Bortles was a mistake. They did. And that and other things caused to be their undoing. The Minnesota Vikings brought in what they thought was going to be a difference maker at the quarterback spot. Yes, a change in OC, take the team and the offense to another level, and they've taken a step back. Last year at this time, the Vikings were 10-3. Now with an $84 million quarterback, they're 10-6-1. Let's hear from the Seahawks head coach. Here's Pete Carroll.
We ran it 40-something times, you know. I don't know that it was...
for over 200 yards.
Anything other than just commitment. You know, our guys are pretty good at staying with it, and Shotty calls it, and Mike, you know, keeps dialing them up on the sidelines where to go with the running game. And it's really about commitment.
Here is Russell Wilson.
When we really needed it in the fourth quarter, we found a way. We got some big runs, and then Chris Carson, you know, getting in the end zone. We needed that touchdown, and then we got a turnover and scampered in the end zone. Coleman did, so that was really cool.
Yeah, it was a 6-0 game. After the field goal block, touchdown scoring drive, Carson from 2 yards out, 2-point conversion, ensuing Vikings possession, fumble by Cousins on a hit, recovered by Seattle, taken back to the house for a touchdown, 21-0. They win the game 21-7. Here's Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer.
You know, we didn't score very many points tonight, didn't score very many points last week. So, you know, part of it is being better on third downs. We haven't really done a good job there. Part of it's being better in the red zone. You know, we had the ball on the 2-yard line, didn't score. So, you know, you keep doing things like that, you're not going to score many points.
Let's hear from number 8 for Minnesota, their quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
I don't think it was any one thing. A combination of not converting third downs, Seahawks making plays. They had a great pass rush. And, you know, we had to just sustain drives. We didn't have a lot of explosive plays. Again, credit the Seahawks for limiting those.
Yeah, but you still got to do something offensively, and the Vikings did not as they lose the game 21-7.
Number 2.
Raiders fire general manager Reggie McKenzie.
Yeah, let's hear from the head coach, John Gruden, on the sudden change in the front office for the Raiders.
Well, we won a game last night. I went home. And, you know, obviously there was a meeting last night, and changes have been made. And I respect everything that this organization is about. I can't exactly answer why the change was made last night, but changes were made. And we got to continue to fight and continue to build this team back. And that's what we're going to do.
Well, listen, that's all well and good. If you're John Gruden, you have a hard time selling. He goes home, and I probably went home after a Raider victory. But you can't sell anybody that you didn't know the change was coming. Nobody, Reggie McKenzie is not getting fired as Raiders general manager if John Gruden doesn't know about it. He's not all of a sudden waking up the next day and being told, listen, we got rid of McKenzie last night. We hope you're A-okay with that. That kind of maneuver, that kind of change is made, and Gruden knows all about it. Here's Gruden talking about McKenzie.
It's like to wish Reggie McKenzie the best. And he's a good friend of mine. He's always going to be a Raider. And we're going to have to rebuild this football team without him. But I will assure the Raider fans that we'll do everything we can to find the right replacement. He left some big shoes to fill. And just want to wish him the best.
Well, Gruden said a lot there. Listen, he might be friends with Reggie McKenzie. I'll believe him. He's not his guy, though. And that's really what Gruden wants here moving forward. He wants his guy in that front office that they see football in the same vision in terms of personnel. What Gruden needs in order to be successful on the football field, and he wants to bring in his guy. That is John Gruden's team. Mark Davis owns it. It is John Gruden's organization, and he's going to run it as he sees fit. Once he stepped in, McKenzie was a smart enough guy. He's been around the NFL circles for a long time here as an executive. He knew that it was just a matter of time until he gets ushered out the door out in Oakland. He didn't even survive 2018 before him being done.
Number three.
MLB winter meetings heating up.
Yeah, no better spot, I think, when you have baseball winter meetings. I mean, they've been in Orlando, Washington, D.C. I mean, you want to go out to Vegas, Nashville, right? You want to go out to Vegas, do you not? Even though the weather's not great, you still got some indoor pools. You got the gambling, you got the shows, you got quality food. You've got the never-ending nightlife, the party scene, and you've got baseball executives going in there and people looking for jobs in baseball, but executives going out in there and starting to try and either finish or complete a deal or lay the groundwork for a free agent signing or a big-time trade. Now, we're a day and a half in because teams did start arriving on Sunday night. All day Monday, not much that went down. Aside from Billy Hamilton signing a one-year deal, the former Red center fielder with the Kansas City Royals. Aside from that, didn't really have all that much. Bryce Harper, still a free agent. Manny Machado, even though Yankees general manager Brian Cashman confirmed that he's had several conversations with Machado's representatives, he is still a free agent. Dallas Keuchel is still a free agent. Andrew Miller, David Robertson, still free agents. Craig Kimbrell, still a free agent. I heard something interesting that was said with baseball executives, the way that front offices are run, everybody looks at it the same way. They're looking to get their guy at their price. They don't want to be the first team in. Somebody will, but they don't want to be the first team in that sets the price or the market across the board, say in the relief market, where there are a number of ways that you can go. I mentioned just a few of them. Miller, Kimbrell, David Robertson. Just three of the power arms that are out there that could be had. Nobody wants them to go out and sign an Andrew Miller and give him the 2 or 3 year contract that he's looking for and set the yearly average for everybody else. Everyone's looking to try and get their guy at their price. There was one crazy rumor that was out there last night in which who knows how much heat there is to it. I was told it's 40% chance, maybe something, and there could be a different variation of this kind of a trade. 40% chance that this kind of a deal gets done, but that the Mets, Yankees, and Marlins have discussed a three-team deal in which the key components of the deal, JT Realmuto, the star catcher for the Marlins, would end up with the Mets. Gary Sanchez, star catcher for the Yankees, would end up with the Marlins. And Noah Syndergaard, power starter for the Mets, would end up in a Yankee uniform. Listen, Yankees and Mets, it is... for them to make any kind of a trade, got to remember a couple years ago, the Mets blocked Jay Bruce from going to the Yankees, or ownership did. They didn't want any part of trying to help the Yankees try and win. This was a couple years ago. This is the year when Jay Bruce ended up in a Cleveland Indian uniform. So the idea of Noah Syndergaard being traded from the Mets to the Yankees, I have a hard time envisioning it, but it was a rumor last night that started to pick up a little bit of steam and heat on what was otherly, a very, very quiet day in Las Vegas. Other than that, really nothing else went on. Besides the Billy Hamilton sign, that was it. We'll see. Maybe it heats up today. Maybe a big trade does go down. Maybe Syndergaard ends up as a Yankee. Realmuto ends up as a Met. And Sanchez ends up as a Marlin. If that deal goes down, that would clearly rock the New York marketplace. But we'll see. That's a trade I got to see, and a lot of people say it, in order to believe it. I still believe I have a hard time envisioning the Mets ever trading a pitcher of the caliber of Syndergaard over to the Yankees. But if you want Real Muto enough, maybe he'll do something that people find to be stunning or shocking. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We'll have all the info going down at the winter meetings covered right here on CBS Sports Radio. As we have a couple days left at that, as executives will probably start to fly out late in the day on Thursday evening, leaving Las Vegas, Nevada. So you got about 2.5 days left of all the rumors and the rumblings and the innuendo. We'll see if any kind of big maneuvers get made, big trades get made, big signings get made, as a number of relievers and clearly the two big stars on the free agency market, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, are looking for jobs, and they'll find them. It's just a matter of which city will they be working in 2019. We come back, we're going to chat a little NFL, a little Chief football, as Dante Hall, NFL return specialist, 9-year NFL vet, will join me. It's Mark Melusis, flying solo, Taz and the Moose, Tuesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
We're going to chat with Dante Hall, 9-year NFL vet, receiver, return specialist for the Chiefs. Talk a little Chiefs football, run around the NFL with him as well. But focus in on Mahomes, Hill, and the year that Andy Reid's team is having this season. We're going to do that in a little bit, following Heller's final update with us this morning. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Moose.
Hi.
How you holding up?
I'm doing great, man.
Solo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's good.
Okay.
Why do you say it like that?
I'm just concerned. Just checking up on you, you know?
Oh, I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm
we're
okay.
We talked earlier about, you know, holiday party, you know, didn't
we
want
did.
You to feel left out.
No,
you know?
I did feel
now
left out.
Now you're in here by yourself,
right.
And it's
right.
Like, yeah.
But then I have the, you know, the comeback, snap back to reality moment as, you know, Marash out in the newsroom for the first half of the season was open that the Giants lost and rooting for the Giants to lose. Now Marash all of a sudden believes and is telling everybody and their mother that Giants are going to win out. Not only will they win out, but if they play the Bears in the opening round, they're going to beat the Bears in Chicago.
Definitely.
So I said, why don't you get back to the Eli is done conversation? It goes from one extreme to the other.
Imagine
now the Giants
that.
Are going to be a team to be reckoned with in the NFC playoffs.
Imagine that conversation happening with a drink in hand.
Yeah, oh, did that transpire
Forget
last
it.
Night?
Forget it.
Really? What was Maresh drinking? A Heffenweisen?
Going down the slide.
Was he bare-chested? Was Maresh bare-chested
Bilotti,
last night?
I don't
night?
Know. Did you see it?
Yes. He did go down the slide without a shirt.
He went down the slide without a shirt on?
Correct.
At a company holiday party.
That's not true. Is that really true?
Yes.
He said it. I didn't believe it.
Why would he do that? You're at a company holiday party. Why would you do that?
I have no idea.
Did he draw something on his chest or no?
No, no.
Did he at least shave down?
I don't know if you could call it that.
Well, he had a hairy chest going down the slide at the company holiday party last night.
Yes.
That's nice. That's a look.
I think it's the fact that the chest is being shown regardless.
That's fair. That is very fair.
I mean,
although if you follow Jay Berman, who does updates here at CBS Sports Radio, he'll often, at least once a week, he'll tweet out a shirtless Marash picture each and every week, which is an interesting look. As Marash is eating some sort of fast food or burger or pizza or Mexican or Chinese and wolfing it down like he's about to go to the chair. So it's an interesting look. Take it away, Heller.
All right, Moose. Monday Night Football. Boy, that I can't get that picture out of my head. All about the Seahawks defense last night. They pitched a shutout until the final minute, basically, in Seattle. A 21-7 win over the Vikings. So, Kirk Cousins, what happened?
I don't think it was any one thing. A combination of not converting third downs, Seahawks making plays. They had a great pass rush. And, you know, we had to just sustain drives. We didn't have a lot of explosive plays. Again, credit the Seahawks for limiting those.
And Cousins also lost a fumble that Justin Coleman returned for a fourth quarter touchdown. Seahawks have won 4 in a row. They're 8-5 now. The Vikings 6-6-1. Those two hold the two wild card spots in the NFC. Meanwhile, the Raiders fired GM Reggie McKenzie just 2 years after he was named the NFL Executive of the Year. The big rumor at baseball's winter meetings in Las Vegas, a three-way trade proposed between the Yankees, Mets, and Marlins, with Noah Syndergaard talks about going to the Yankees and JT Realmuto going to the Mets, but USA Today is reporting that the Marlins are downplaying these rumors. Meanwhile, the Yankees say they're still in the mix for free agent Manny Machado, but out on Bryce Harper. The Tigers signing pitcher Tyson Ross to a one-year deal. NBA Draymond Green returned after missing 11 games with a toe injury, but Steph Curry was the story for the Warriors against the Timberwolves.
Back rim no good. Rose rebound stolen by Curry. Takes another three. Got it! Steph Curry with the steal, the three, and the celebration.
Tim Roy called at Warriors Radio. 7 three-pointers, 38 points for Steph Curry. Golden State beat Minnesota 116-108. Final meeting between LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. James guarded Wade as he missed the potential tying three-pointer. In the final seconds, the Lakers edged the Heat 108-105. Elsewhere, six straight wins for the Celtics.
20 to go. Celtics by 13. Tatum shovels back to Morris. He's hot from three, and he's got another one. Fourth three of the night for Marcus Morris on a night nobody else in black and green can make one.
Sean Grandy on Celtics Radio, season high 31 for Marcus Morris. The Celtics beat the Pelicans 113-100. Paul George also scored 31. Thunder over the Jazz 122-113. Clippers beat the Suns in overtime 123-119. Nuggets topped the Grizzlies 105-99. College football, Alabama leading the way. Four first-team All-Americans. Quinnen Williams and Deontay Thompson on defense. Jerry Jeudy and Jonah Williams on offense. Tua Tagovailoa made the second team behind Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray. And Kansas State going with North Dakota State's Chris Klieman as head coach, replacing the retiring Bill Snyder. Moose?
All right. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it, buddy. Great job this morning. Let's hit the guest line right now. Let's welcome aboard Dante Hall, 9-year NFL vet, return specialist, was just a fantastic player to watch during his days in the National Football League. Hey, Dante, Mark Malusis with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning here on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Dante. A lot to get into when you focus in on the Chiefs. So let's start with the quarterback, Mahomes. You know, I made this statement yesterday. I think he's the most gifted quarterback in the National Football League right now. What about what you've seen here from Mahomes and what he can do at the position?
I mean, I would have to agree with that. You definitely have to throw Aaron Rodgers in there. We don't want to be prisoners of the moment, and I don't want to be biased. But I think you definitely have a legitimate argument by saying that, because what he's doing on a consistent basis and the throws that he's making, I mean, you can't help but say that. So I think he's incredible. We all knew his talents, but I think performances like we saw this past weekend on a consistent basis is what's making him, you know, the best, if not, like you said, the most talented this year, but he's definitely having the best season, in my opinion, MVP caliber.
Yeah, no question. Dante, did you think he'd be this good this soon?
I knew he would be this good, yes. I trust Andy Reid. And for Andy Reid to give up Alex Smith after coming off, 13-3 season, he must have seen something. And to go and get this guy in the first round and trade up for him, he must have been this good. So we knew he was this good. What I was waiting to see were moments like last week against a top team, a top defense, pressures mounting. That's what I was waiting to see. And he's just proven to me that he not only has the talent, but he has that it factor, guys. You know what I mean? That it factor that when the game is on the line, you just feel like he's going to get it done. Guys like Tom Brady have that. Peyton Manning, he's this year proven that he has that it factor.
Well, he no question, you're right about that, Dante. And, you know, he does things with the football that we have never seen guys do. It's one thing to look off a safety, Dante. We've seen, you know, quarterbacks, since you've been watching football, have the ability to do that and put the ball where they need it to be and get a safety to move over 10 or 15 feet. But yeah, what about the no-look pass that we saw this past weekend? Very similar to what we saw from Magic in his days with the Lakers, yeah, in the NBA. What about the no-look pass that we saw from Mahomes on Sunday against the Ravens?
I mean, it was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I would rank it as the second best play that he's made this year. Go back to the Denver game in Denver and that left-handed pass that he made. Remember
that's another
that
good one. Yes, I do remember that,
that
one.
That one, to me, was just sensational. So I like that one more, the left-handed pass coming from a right-handed quarterback, and I believe that play was on fourth down by Tyreek Hill. I think that was a fourth down play to get the, a conversion. So, but yeah, back to the no-look pass. It was sensational. I've never seen that. And I think this kid is going to continue to do things like that that we've never seen at the quarterback position before.
You know, Dante, you look at Tyreek Hill and what he's done for that Chiefs team and what he's done for that Chiefs offense. I mean, when you were lining up and playing for the Chiefs, you were an explosive playmaker, a return man. You were as good as it gets, as good as I've seen, Dante. I'm curious, what do you see when you watch Tyreek Hill do what he's been doing this year for the Chiefs?
You know, I'm going to tell you what I see. I see a number one receiver. And people like to compare us, and I get it, because the statue and the position, and he came in as a return man and all of those things. But I just got to give praise where praise is due. This guy's a legitimate, in my opinion, number one receiver. I was never a number one receiver. Now, I can give you some. I could give you number one plays here and there, but I was definitely not a number one receiver. And I think that's what I see in this guy. He's more than just a return man. He can run all the routes. He's good with his hands. He made contested catches for a little guy. He's the new AB. He's the new Antonio Brown, if you ask me.
Yeah, he is that good, and you're right. I mean, listen, but I mean the ability to break games, that's where I draw the comparison, because that's what you had the ability to do as a return man. You were able to, you know, at times during your career, kind of break the spirit of the opponent. You made guys look silly in the open field. You had an unbelievable amount of moves. I get you guys are a little bit different, and I understand the stature, and you guys are smaller guys and smaller athletes and the like, but you know, Tyreek Hill has the ability at the receiver spot to do what you did in the return game.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps playing with a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, I tell you that. So, like, that fourth and nine conversion, Patrick just, you know, running to his right, throws it back to his left on a dime, and Tyreek comes out of nowhere to catch it. I mean, it definitely helps playing with a guy like Patrick and also in an offensive system that Andy Reid puts out on the field week in and week out. But this guy is just, it has impressed me. I went and sat down with him, did a one-on-one meeting with him in training camp, and he said he wanted to be this guy. So to see him backing up his words this season, week in and week out, has just been amazing to watch.
We're talking to Dante Hall, 9-year NFL veteran. Hey, Dante, how much would it mean to you to see Andy Reid finally win a Super Bowl?
It means a lot. Man, you want to see the good guys in this league win, and I want to see him get that moniker off his back as far as being a guy that is just a regular season type coach, you know, wins in the regular season but never gets it done or can't get you to the big dance. I think Andy Reid not only has the IQ and the cachet, but I just think he's a good guy, and I would like to see him win. And he plays for my Kansas City Chiefs, so I am a little biased in that department.
Well, I can understand that. Do you think he thinks about it, Dante?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as human beings, as in any walk of life, you know what's said about you. You know what the rhetoric is about you as far as your shortcomings. So he's heard the chatter and the noise. He knows.
No, I get it. I mean, I'm just curious because he's been uber successful, you know, helped build franchises in Philadelphia and now Kansas City. We know he's a great developer of young quarterbacks. We saw with McNabb in Philly and now with Mahomes in Kansas City. His offenses are great as well. He's kind of a visionary. He takes different things from different guys, too.
Yep.
I'm curious, you know, how much does that – I'm sure winning drives everybody, especially in the NFL, because that's how you're graded out. I'm curious how much of an issue – do you think if he – you know, do you think he'd look at his career differently if he never won a Super Bowl?
I think so, absolutely. Because I think he's super competitive like that. He comes off, he speaks really nice. He's not a vulgar type of coach. But deep down inside, this guy's competitive. And as a competitor, I know it has to be eating him alive that he's had all of this success and all of the accolades that you just mentioned, but yet he doesn't have the big accolade. And I think that's why he's still doing it. I think that's why he gets up every morning and goes to work, is to win that thing.
when you look at, you know, Dante, we're talking to Dante Hall, 9-year NFL veteran. When you look at the complexion of the AFC, how many teams do you think are capable of getting themselves to a Super Bowl this year in the AFC?
Only in the AFC total, okay, not the AFC West. I look at there's three contenders. You have the Patriots, obviously. You have to put them there every year that Tom Brady is at the quarterback and Belichick is the coach. Obviously, my Kansas City Chiefs this year. And then I look at the San Diego Chargers. I am really nervous about this game on Thursday because Phillip Rivers is one of those quarterbacks. If he gets hot, he's like a Steph Curry. It's just nothing you can do about it. So you don't want to allow him to get hot, get a rhythm, feel good. You want to make him uncomfortable right away. So I look at those three teams as being the three contenders this year.
Yeah, like I could see that. But Dante, you know this. The Chiefs own the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yes, we do. But that Chargers team is a different. That Chargers team is a different team, and you never know when they're going to, you know, break the seal and beat you. So all of that stuff is in the past. This week, you got a red hot San Diego Chargers team. They've won 9 out of the last 10. How many teams have done that in the NFL? One on a 9 out of 10 game win streak.
No, you're right. They have been hot, and I think after that Steeler game, Dante, I think they kind of showed everybody that they're a little bit different this year, and Rivers has been playing at MVP level, but it just doesn't seem to matter. Every time the Chiefs roll out there against the Chargers, it seems like the game's going to go the Chiefs' way.
Until it doesn't.
That's fair.
Until it doesn't. So I'm nervous. I think we'll walk away to win, but we must win this game. This is a must win for the Chiefs on so many levels this week.
No, and I can understand that. Dante, two more before I let you go. Number one is, how much does the Chiefs' defense, do you think, concern you about this team being able to get to where you think they can go?
In the beginning of the season, it was a huge concern. I thought they would hold us back. But at this point, I feel like we've gotten to the point where we won't be as good as the Bears and we won't be as good as the Ravens, but we can be opportunistic, kind of like we were in the Ravens game. We kind of sucked on defense for 3 quarters. And then Houston and D4 came up with some crucial plays, a couple of strip sacks, fumbles. Scandrick has had a couple of games, one against the Rams and one last week to where he could have had an INT to end the game. So my concern is not as much as it was in the beginning. I think we have now arisen to a point to where we could just make enough plays to help out the offense and be an opportunistic defense. So,
final
one with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, well, that's it. As long as you have Mahomes each and every week, you got yourself a shot. And Dante, as a former Chief, how do you think your former organization handled everything surrounding Kareem Hunt?
They handled it first class. I mean, they were put in a situation to where their hands were kind of forced when that video came out. It shocked the world. So you can only imagine what it did to the organization. And we knew as Chiefs fans, we knew about the situation. But once the visuals came out, it was just tough to hang on to this guy. And the fact that they brought him in, explained it to him, he took, you know, onus on the actions that he took. And I think everyone, even Kareem Hunt, I think he handled it with class too. Even with this interview with Lisa Salters, I think everyone handled it with class and did what they had to do, and now we move on.
Hey, Dante, I enjoyed certainly watching you as a player and appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with me this morning, and continued success, and enjoy watching those Chiefs. All right, bud?
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks,
all right, guys. You got it. Dante Hall, a 9-year NFL vet. Talk a little Chiefs football here on this Tuesday morning. We come back. We've got the undercard for you. It's Mark Melusis with you, flying solo in. It is Taz and the Moose. Taz is off. We'll come back. Undercard next. CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all right now at geico.com. Been a good show. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram, at Taz and the Moose. Remember to download the podcast each and every day, radio.com and Apple Podcasts. Really appreciate the support. You guys have been fantastic doing that, and appreciate all of our listeners on all of our great affiliates all across the country, and also Sirius and XM 206, the app as well. Let's get to it, the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present the undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
Yes, Mike.
NBA MVP and superstar Stephen Curry says he doesn't believe man landed on the moon. Why are NBA players in space having such problems here?
It was two Thanksgivings ago, and Taz and I had yet to launch this show. I had received notice that I was going to be doing the show, but it was two Thanksgivings ago, and I think I had worked the mornings on WFAN locally. We had the big turkey dinner. I was sitting there watching. I think that game, Carolina was destroying Dallas, and I passed out on my sister-in-law's couch. And as I was sleeping, and then I woke up, amongst the 45-minute nap, my brother-in-law, Anthony Laurie, went into a diatribe at the table that man never landed on the moon, and went into a conspiracy theory that he watched some video saying it was all in Los Angeles. It was at a film studio. It was a set. It was made up. It was never really transpired and happened. And obviously the people there at the table as well said, no, that's not true. That did happen. We actually did land on the moon. It is no conspiracy theory. This is not something that was made up. This is not some kind of snow job to the American public at the time. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. That actually did happen. I mean, that was in outer space. That was on the moon. That did happen. But I was not there for that conversation, but when I read the Steph Curry story, it brought me back to the conversation that I missed out on that Thanksgiving, two Thanksgivings ago, when I was sleeping, dealing with a turkey hangover after working the morning show on WFAN, as my brother-in-law decided to tell everybody nobody landed on the moon. Listen, the Earth is not flat, and we did land on the moon. Can people just start to get a grip? There are things that actually did happen. And Steph Curry, I don't know, is he saying it just for the sake of saying it to get some reaction on social media? We're talking about it in the undercard. You don't think, Mike, do you really think Steph Curry puts his head to the pillow at night and says, you know what, Neil Armstrong, eh?
No, I think he's bored.
Yes, probably. I don't know if I can say the same about my brother-in-law, but I agree with you. I think he was bored. All right, next.
Ooh, oh!
Jennifer Aniston revealed on The Ellen Show that she enjoys watching TV in the nude. Is this an activity you've ever partaken in?
No. Nor do I have the body of Jennifer Aniston. So I would say if I had Jennifer Aniston's body, then honestly, I might walk around naked all the time. But I do not have Jennifer Aniston's body. Sometimes I run from the mirror after getting out of the shower. It's not exactly the best look in the world. So no, I do not. I don't sleep in the nude. I don't watch TV in the nude. No, I do not. Beseglia, do you?
I do not. No. No, I'm just going to shut my mouth. No.
Bilotti, do you?
I do not. As a matter of fact, I put on a blindfold when I take a shower.
I can understand that. I can understand that. I can understand that. But listen, good for Jennifer Aniston. I'm sure that got her Q rating up after making that bold statement on Ellen. No. Jennifer Aniston is like 45 years old. She looks like she's 25. It's amazing. It really is amazing. Great genes. Anyway, go next.
Ooh. Oh.
We saw a great defensive performance last night from the Seahawks. We've seen good ones from the Bears, Ravens, Texans. Any faith that these defenses can show up and maybe surprise one of the big-time offenses in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think there are a couple I would probably bank on. I don't know if I'd bank on Seattle. I don't know if I'd bank on Houston. I don't. I mean, that Texans defense gave up a ton of passing yardage. to Andrew Luck this past weekend. And Baker Mayfield, if he was able to take care of the football, the Browns could have won in Houston a couple weeks back. I'll trust a couple defenses. One, I trust Chicago. I trust Khalil Mack being able to get after it. Even though I did hear Carl Banks, legendary Giants linebacker, make an interesting point, saying that teams have got to test Khalil Mack, not just and got to run at him. Make sure that you play him. Make sure that he understands the need to play the run and don't play to his strengths as a pass rushing demon. I thought that was fair. They brought that up in comparison to Lawrence Taylor, saying Lawrence Taylor was always great against the run. Now, I trust the Bears defense, and I trust the Cowboys defense. I think those are two legit defenses in the National Football League. The others, I'm not so sure. I think they could have a game. Do I trust Seattle's defense on the road? Wild card weekend? I don't know if I necessarily do. I don't. Right now, I don't. They've been good. I don't know if I trust them to the level of the Bears and the Cowboys, but it is nice. It is refreshing. As I mentioned before, I like offensive football, but I also have a great appreciation for teams, the ability to play defense, especially with the rule changes in the NFL, which makes it so easy to throw the football, so easy to put touchdowns up on the scoreboard and score points. If you can play defense, it really is, in 2018, an absolute art form. Next.
The Bulls have been a disaster the last couple of weeks. They fired their head coach, Fred Hoiberg. Now, Jim Boylan, the interim coach, just lost by 56 points. The players are revolting. Will the Chicago Bulls have three head coaches in one season?
I think you could. Wouldn't they have 27 turnovers against Sacramento as a team? 27 or 29 turnovers as a team, I believe, against the Sacramento Kings. That is awful. Imagine if you're... I'm a Knicks fan. I thought it was bad being a Knicks fan. Imagine if you're a Bulls fan right now. Hoiberg was a terrible hire that they hung around on for way too long. They've done a terrible job of rebuilding that franchise as well. The relationship bringing in at the time Dwayne Wade, the rebuilding, Jimmy Butler, having to pair him off. It's a disaster right now in Chicago. So, no, I don't think if it continues in this nature, I don't think Boylan's going to survive it. I don't. They don't want to practice for him. They don't want to play for him. You are charging prices for people to money for people to show up and watch the Bulls actually play basketball games. So if it continues in this way, yeah, I could imagine them having three different head coaches this year. I could. Next.
Ooh. Oh.
Would there be a bigger slap in the face to the Steelers if they collapsed and somehow Baker Mayfield and the Browns won the AFC North?
Would there be a bigger slap in the face? No, I think that would top it. To win the division? I think that would be it. But the Steelers, the way that they have urinated these games away in Denver, last week in Oakland, I mean, you want to... They've been their own worst enemy, whether it be the turnovers by Roethlisberger or the decision last week by Tomlin. To not put Roethlisberger back in the game in Oakland because he had the arrogance that he could beat the Raiders with Dobbs at quarterback, they have done themselves in. And they are in their own position because of their own doing. And right now, do you think they're beating the Patriots this week? They're not beating the Pats. It doesn't matter what the Pats have, offensively and defensively. Belichick owns Pittsburgh. They own them. Just as Pittsburgh owns Kansas City, as Kansas City owns the Chargers. Puts a nice bow on this one. Our thanks to Jim Diapoulos, Dante Hall for joining us earlier on the program. Thanks to everyone on social media, on the phones as well. Mike, great job. Pete, fantastic job. Heller, enjoyed it. Enjoy your Tuesday, everybody. We out. Peace.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.